Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. My co-host Meghna Chakrabarty is out today. What happened on a Pop Warner League football field last month in central Massachusetts has once again raised big concerns about youth sports and safety and big questions about how the adults in charge could have let this happen. If you missed the story, which was reported first by the Boston Globe, here's what happened. Last month, five children suffered concussions in a single game between the Tantasqua Pee Wees and a team from Southbridge, whose website asks, "Are you tough enough?" As the children went down, the game continued, and Southbridge ran up a score in a 52-0 rout. The injured kids, 10 to 12 years old, were all on the losing team, and because their concussions went undiagnosed, they continued to play even after they were injured. In the case of one boy, his eyes rolled back in his head, and all of them ended up missing various amounts of school in the days that followed. The Central Mass Pop Warner League suspended both teams' coaches for the rest of the season, permanently banned the three officials who were working the game, and placed two other league officials on probation because they were present at the game but took no action. In a moment, we're going to talk about concussions with a medical expert and how to keep kids safe on the playing fields. And we're going to be taking your calls and your questions about this. But joining us now from Philadelphia is John Butler. He's executive director of Pop Warner Football. And Mr. Butler, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity, Anthony.
So obviously this wasn't the way it was supposed to be. And before we talk about how Pop Warner tries to keep kids safe, what went wrong in that game last month?
Well, first of all, from what we've been told, none of the concussed players were sent back into the game. We have been told that they were kept on the sideline. But beyond that, there were two rules that were clearly violated very early in the game. The first, we have for the overall safety of our players, we require a minimum of 16 players be ready and able to play at any given time. And if the number of available players falls below that due to injury or whatever, then the game should be stopped at that time and forfeited. And clearly, the Tantasco team fell below that number very early in the game. The game should have stopped right then.
Hmm. Then there's a mercy rule as well, right?
Yeah,
the game should have been suspended.
A lopsided rule that says that when the point differential gets to 28 points, then a number of other factors come into play, the most important of which is you change to a running clock, which means the game plays out much faster. The winning team can only run between their own tackles, and they can't pass the ball, and some other issues also. But since it was 28-0 in the first quarter, even if they hadn't stopped the game, they should have gone to a running clock and these other measures implemented also, and that was ignored also.
I see. Mr. Butler, are you satisfied with the actions that the Central Mass Pop Warner League took with those suspensions that we mentioned and banning the officials, essentially, forever?
It sounds like the game got very out of control very early on. And really, you know, this organization, Pop Warner Little Scholars, exists to serve children. And the number one priority is to keep them safe. So if the game gets out of control, we would certainly hope and put the onus on the adults involved to make a decision whether to continue and to try to implement different procedures or to stop the game. And clearly this game should have been stopped, as I mentioned, with our 16 minimum player rule. And the fact that it wasn't is just really of great concern to us.
Sure. Let me ask you about other safety measures that may or may not be considered. I mean, we are talking about children here. Pop Warner strengthened rules to limit tackling and contact in practices. I'm wondering if when we hear about episodes like this, about what happened in Central Mass, does this suggest a need for other safety rules, tighter rules during games?
That's very difficult to do. I mean, it sounds easy, But our two new rules this year, first of all, it really goes back 2 years ago. We were the first national youth sports organization to implement our own concussion rule, which says any head or neck injury, the participant is removed from participation until signed off on in writing by a trained medical professional. More recently, as of June of this year, we implemented two new rules that limit the amount of time spent in contact and scrimmaging and practice. And the second rule says that no full-speed head-on drills in which the players start more than 3 yards apart. Now, if you think about, you know, two teams lining up on a football team, you may have running backs lined up 5 to 6 yards deep and defensive backs lined up 6 or even more, 8 to 10 yards deep. And how do you say if, you know, if a running back is coming through the middle of the line and a defensive back is coming up to make a tackle, oh, can't do that. You started too far apart. So it becomes very difficult in game situations, but we certainly, you know, so many more hours are spent in practice. We know that there are more injuries overall in practice just because of the more exposure and more time. So that's the reason we implemented the new rules for practice.
All right. Well, John Butler, Executive Director of Pop Warner Football, thanks so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, listeners, what do you think? Do you think the Pop Warner League has responded effectively to what happened in central Massachusetts last month? And what does this story say about the safety of youth sports in general and about the attitude toward the importance of sports in general when it comes to kids? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Now, as alarming as this story is, it's certainly not the first to raise concerns about head injuries and youth sports. That's a subject Dr. Robert Cantu knows a lot about. He's a neurosurgeon who specializes in athletic brain trauma at the BU School of Medicine. He's also author of the book Concussions and Our Kids. And Dr. Robert Cantu, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Anthony. Glad to be here.
Also joining us is Zach Mason. He's 18 years old. He's a senior in school. He sustained a concussion 2 years ago when he was playing JV football in Westboro. He's here to talk a little bit about what happened to him. And Zach Mason, thanks for joining us. We appreciate
it. Good to be here.
And with us is Laura Mason, Zach's mom, who also works for the Brain Injury Association of Massachusetts. And Laura Mason, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Cantu, if I could, let me start with you with a couple of questions. What struck you about this story out of Central Mass? How common is it that multiple kids go down with concussions in a single game?
What struck me is several things. I do think this is probably an aberration, that there were five kids that had concussions. But what I think we have to understand is at most Pop Warner games, there are no medical people there that can even diagnose concussions. And there really are no good statistics about what is the rate of concussion or, for that matter, any other injury at the Pop Warner level because the medical personnel are just not there. So I think that it's a serious concern in my mind that we're allowing youngsters at that age to bash heads and to take on essentially brain trauma and brain injury.
Tell me what it takes to diagnose a concussion on the sideline of a football game. I mean, this seems to be one of the sort of more difficult questions to get your hands around. I mean, there you are in the heat of a game, a kid goes down. What happens and what should happen?
Well, first of all, it takes medical expertise to do it. People can be trained that aren't doctors to have that expertise. EMTs can have that expertise. Certainly certified athletic trainers can have it. A concussion that involves a loss of consciousness, which is a rare one, or at least less than 10% of the time, is obvious to recognize on an athletic field. Somebody's unconscious, they're down, they're not getting up. But the majority of them are not involving loss of consciousness, just rather a brief alteration in the alertness of the individual or one or more of 26 common post-concussion symptoms. And that's a fairly laborious and detailed examination that needs to be done when you suspect a concussion.
But is it your view, I mean, when you point out that usually at a Pop Warner game they're not going to have medical professionals on the sidelines, is it your view that there should be?
Well, absolutely. We at the highest levels, the National Football League, obviously they can afford multiple trainers and multiple physicians to be on the sideline, and they do, and that's all good. But our youngsters' brains are a greater risk than adults for brain injury for a variety of reasons. And so we certainly shouldn't be allowing sports at high risk of brain injury, especially for our youth, to be played without medical personnel in attendance.
Say a little bit more about what you just said. Concussions, of course, are dangerous for anybody, but particularly to kids. Why?
Kids' brains, first of all, are not myelinated. That's the coating of the nerve fibers. It's like coating on a telephone wire. It helps transmission, but it also gives strength. Kids' brains are more susceptible to the what we call excitotoxic shock. It's a metabolic injury of concussion than adults. It's easier to set that up in kids than adults. Adults have a much smaller head-to-body ratio. Kids' heads are disproportionately large. They sit on very weak necks, and that bobblehead doll effect also makes youngsters more prone to injury. And if that's not bad enough, our youngsters usually have the oldest equipment. They usually have the coaches that have the least amount of experience. They rarely have medical personnel on the sideline.
I want to get Zach Mason and Laura Mason in this conversation. As we said, Zach, you're 18 now. You sustained a concussion 2 years ago while you were playing junior varsity football in Westboro. Tell us what happened to you, if you don't mind.
Well, what I remember is that it was just a regular game Saturday morning, and I had a pass play, and I saw an open receiver. And out of the corner of my eye, a blitzing linebacker came and just put his helmet down into my face mask, and I just flopped back and landed on my head.
Hmm. And did you black out, or were you taken off the field? What happened?
No, I shook off the hit. I mean, it obviously hurt more than the other hits I had taken, but I just thought it was like the others.
So you went on playing?
Yeah.
So at what point did it become clear that this was more than just a hard hit?
When I was trying to study for my test the next day, I just couldn't concentrate, and I was just so tired.
Really? So it Zach's mom, Laura, chime in here. What did you observe in your son?
I didn't observe anything different. It just looked like a normal hit in the game. He didn't fall back. He didn't get dizzy looking or anything like that. It was just a normal hit, just like any other hit.
But what I mean about what you observed when he came home and began trying to live his life, what did you see?
I thought he was just like any other teenager, tired, not wanting to go to bed at night, and sleepy. And
so when did it become clear to either one of you that this was a serious concussion?
When he went to school the following week and he was having more headaches, and that's when I called the pediatrician.
I see. And what was the recommendation in terms of playing football again, Zach?
Well, my trainer just told me to stay out until the headaches got better and all my symptoms went away. And my doctor, who I went to, like the brain injury specialist, told me to stay home from school until everything resided, but never did.
It never did.
Yeah.
So 2 years later, can I ask how you're doing now?
Obviously a lot better, but I still get headaches every day. I'm just not the same. I'm always tired.
I know you are an avid athlete, an avid football player. Have you been playing football again?
I actually stopped after that, but I'm still playing baseball.
I see. So you stopped football.
Yeah.
Relieved as his mother, Laura, that he's not playing football anymore?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. And so what's your response to this story that we've been hearing out of Central Mass? I'm just curious.
Well, as watching him every time he took a hit, I was definitely nervous. I just wish that the players were pulled out a little bit sooner than they actually were.
Yeah. Dr. Cantu, I'd love to get you to chime in on the story you've just heard Zach tell, because I think when most of us hear about concussion, we're usually imagining, you know, you've got to sit out for a day or two, but this is a reminder that it can really be a lot more severe and last a lot longer than just a few days, right?
Yes, a couple of things he said certainly rang true. One is that he said the mechanism of hit was that he was hit, and then he was thrust backwards and his head hit again. And if that truly was a double hit, that is something that sets one up for a more serious concussion. We often see the double hit producing a concussion with symptoms that last a long time. And yes, roughly 80% of people will be over their concussion symptoms within 7 to 10 days with proper physical and cognitive rest. But roughly 15% or 20% will not, and those that go on to persistent symptoms can have post-concussion syndrome, such as he is describing, that may last many months and even years.
Mm. And I know you obviously don't know everything you'd need to know as a doctor about his case, but does this sound sensible that after 2 years he's just pretty much sworn off football given the injury that he's had?
Oh, I think there's no question with still having post-concussion symptoms, any collision sport should not be played.
Mm. We've got a lot of callers that want to get in on this conversation. I want to get to them in just a minute. I just, Dr. Kintu, I have one more question that I want to ask you before we do this. I was doing a little research before this. 4 million kids between the ages of 6 and 17 play tackle football in this country. And according to the to Nationwide Children's Hospital, there were more than 8,600 concussions a year, with many more that go unreported. Should kids so young be playing full tackle football? And I guess there's a big range in there, 6 to 17 years old. Should 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 10-year-olds be playing full contact tackle football?
In our book, we definitely make the case that tackle football should not be played under the age of 14. That full body checking in ice hockey should not be allowed until the age of 14. We're close there now. It's 13. When we started the book, it was 11. Mm. But in the last couple of years, it's come up to 13. And that heading in soccer should start at age 14 as well.
Heading in soccer.
Heading
yeah.
in soccer.
Mm. And is that realistic? In other words, there's a what I gather is a sensible medical recommendation, but the folks out there who want to play sports and are excited to have their kids play sports, you know, is it what sense do you have about the way they respond to that recommendation?
2 years ago, we went before USA Football's leading body, their leaders, and basically presented them the data that concerned us, chronic traumatic encephalopathy found in teenagers, the growing incidence of post-concussion syndrome, and said basically it's crazy for kids, especially very young kids, 5, 6, 7, to be bashing heads. Hmm. And they said, Bob, we really don't care if we're playing tackle football or we're playing flag football. We'd support flag football. Parents won't support it.
Hmm.
And that's when kind of a light bulb went off that we've got to educate the parents, give them the information, then they can make choices. But if their choices are to sign their kids up for flag football, then they're not going to be playing tackle football at youth levels.
Laura Mason, how do you respond to that? I mean, you're a parent. Does that strike a chord, this idea that parents are really among the reason why 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds are out there bashing heads with each other?
Yes, that definitely does happen. As a parent of a son who loves sports, we've been playing sports since he could barely walk. And
sure.
I'll tell you, the parents really are the ones that push the kids more than the kids themselves.
Well, let's take a couple of calls. We're talking with Dr. Robert Kintu. He's a neurosurgeon who specializes in athletic brain trauma at BU School of Medicine. Zach Mason here is here who suffered a concussion a couple of years ago, and his mother, Laura Mason. Let's go to Brian, who's calling from Hopkinton. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
How you guys doing?
Very well, thank you.
I'm a father of two boys, and I'm also a social worker that works with children and adolescents. And what I've seen over the years is the increased competitiveness of these dads who sometimes are using these leagues as their own personal fantasy leagues with in-town competition. And they're really seeing a threat to these guys when their sons are unable to perform or their sons are deemed as weak. I think we've really gone backwards in that evolutionary scale around youth athletes. I know some of my friends who have kids who are in three leagues at the same time. These kids are in the hockey.
Brian, we're having trouble. Your line is breaking up, but you put a good point on the table, and the idea here that over-competitive adults are sort of using their kids as a kind of fantasy league. We're going to put that on the table. Let me just get one more call in here. Liz is calling from Lexington. Hi, Liz. You're on the air.
Hi. Great to be here. Great topic. So my son, who's just turned 14 last spring, he had two concussions from soccer. After the first concussion, he healed. Doctor said he could go back, and he went back. I think he probably wasn't fully healed. He got a second concussion. So right now, he took 4 months off from soccer. He's back at soccer. But I wanted the doctor to weigh in on something that I turned to, and that is omega-3 fish oil supplementation. My son went on about 4 grams when he had the concussion to get that inflammation down. And now he and his older brother, I have them both on omega-3 as a maintenance, just to keep the brain boosted and keep the brain strong. Does the doctor feel that all kids should be taking, who are doing sports especially, omega-3 supplements? And what else can we parents do to protect our kids beyond, you know, the safety gear and just being vigilant parents?
Got it, Liz. Dr. Kintu.
Well, first of all, whether it be omega-3s, whether it be hyperbaric oxygen chambers, There's no solid double-blinded science behind the fact that they work. Right now, we don't know. The answer is a big question mark. There's theory behind why omega-3s might be good, and especially DHA, which is the one the brain is mostly composed of. But there's also no downside in taking them. They simply enhance your lipid profile, which is a good thing for your heart. So I don't have any problem with people taking omega-3s. I just don't have any solid science that it's going to help the brain.
Thanks for that call. Let's take another one. Dan is calling from Newton. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. So I have a son who's playing soccer and actually had a light concussion a few weeks ago. But I was a captain of the soccer team when I was in 1969. I was varsity freshman in college. So I'm excited about this football. I can't believe how rough it's gotten. You know, if you can't do things with finesse, you do it with force. They can grab each other's shirts. They can. It's amazing. And they have the league does not allow schools to run practices on the weekends, so they run captain's practices. So that means there's no adult supervising there. They take attendance to so that, you know, to see who's going to deserve to play during the week. It's a 7-day-a-week thing. I have the kid take orthodontic appointments during class time so he doesn't miss soccer because otherwise you won't get to play.
Dan, I think I get the point. I mean, there's a huge amount of practice, a big commitment to sports on the part of a lot of people. But you raise a question I wanted to bring up with Dr. Cantu, and that is we've been focused on football. We've had a couple of calls about soccer. What about these other sports, ice hockey, soccer, other sports that potentially offer the possibility of a lot of contact between kids?
Well, I think it's interesting for some of our listeners maybe to hear that soccer is right up there with football in terms of recognized incidents of concussion. So soccer, from the standpoint of the head, is not particularly safe. It's in the high-risk group, and it's in the act of heading that almost all the concussions happen. And it's heads colliding, not ball hitting head. Sometimes it's head striking another body part, like a shoulder, an elbow, a forearm. But certainly in the act of heading, soccer is a very high-risk sport for head trauma.
Doctor, I'm wondering sort of how you respond, because we've heard this from a couple of different callers, and this theme that so much of the structure and the excitement and the sort of time devoted to sports is obviously put in place by the adults in charge of these children's lives. What do you think about that, and how should that be addressed?
Well, it's kind of a schism for me. On the one hand, I'm thoroughly excited and behind parents being interested in wanting to spend time with their children, whether it be with music, whether it be with studies, whether it be with sports. I think that's great. They're spending quality time with their kids. But if they're trying to live through their kids and enjoy things that they didn't necessarily do themselves and see their kids do them, then that unfortunately is taking on a perspective that's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Another thing parents should know is that although when your child is 5 or 10 or 12, if they're specializing in a sport, if they're getting extra coaching, if they're getting extra training, if they're getting better equipment, they're going to be better at that sport at age 5, 10, or 12. But it's not going to make a darn bit of difference when somebody's 20 or 22 or 24. That's going to be natural ability, God-given genes, and the emotional makeup of the individual. So the fact that Tom Brady didn't play football till he was in high school hasn't seemed to detract too hard from his career.
That sounds like real wisdom. Let's try to fit one more call in. Dean is calling from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Dean. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Hi, Dr. Cantu. The story is when I was a child, I used to play soccer, and I was in the hospital with 5 concussions over 5 years. And that was the 60s. I'm now 50 years old. I now have stage 3 Parkinson's disease. And the doctors have equated it to blunt multiple trauma when I was a child. And I wanted to find out Dr. Cantu's feelings on that because the jury's not out whether that is a cause of Parkinson's or not. But the theory is that that's where my Parkinson's originated.
Well, and Dean, let's get Dr. Cantu to respond. And Dean, we're sorry for what you've gone through, and thanks for the call.
Dean, I, of course, can't comment in your case without knowing a lot more and knowing what a neurologic exam really shows. But there's no question that a component of chronic traumatic encephalopathy for many years has been known to be Parkinsonism. And we believe that the troubles that Muhammad Ali had early on with the Parkinson's syndrome and only later on in life the cognitive problems, that it was CTE and it was a Parkinson component of it that manifested itself earlier in life.
Well, Dr. Robert Cantu, I want to thank you for coming in. You put a lot of important ideas and thoughts on the table. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Anthony. My pleasure.
That's Dr. Robert Cantu. He's a neurosurgeon who specializes in athletic brain trauma at the BU School of Medicine. He's author of the book Concussions and Our Children. And Zach and Laura Mason, thanks to both of you. And Zach, stay safe and good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up, we talk sports with Only a Game's Bill Littlefield, also Caleb Daniloff's story on how he ran against addiction and beat it. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.